Good morning and welcome. It's week five of the legislative session, and you're tuned in to the Florida League of Cities weekly session call. For those that are new to the call-in, we start the call with each of our lobbying team going around the horn talking about the bills that are moving this week and where we need your help on the advocacy front. Once the lobbyists have shared their updates, we'll open the call for questions. If you'd like to ask a question, at that point in time, you'll press *9 on your phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded, and we'll send out a summary of the call as well as a link to the call's recording later this afternoon. Please note, it's not possible to cover every single bill filed during a 30-minute call-in, but to see what that universe looks like, so of bills impacting cities, go to flcities.com, hover your mouse over the advocacy tab. Halfway down is a button for bill summaries, and you can see all of the bills that we are watching and working on this session. With that as the intro, it is week five. It is busy around here. There's lots of bills on agendas this week. If it's not on an agenda this week, chances are that bill is going to be stuck for a little while. Next week will be the last week of subcommittees, and many Senate committees will also stop meeting next week as well. So we're at the halfway point of session. We're halfway there. Still living on a prayer, but we're going to have a good session. And with that as the intro, I'll kick it over to Charles Chapman for the finance and tax update this week.
Well, happy Monday, everybody. From the finance and tax corner, wanted to alert you on the Tuesday agenda of the House Agriculture and Tourism Committee, HJR 1257 and House Bill 1259 by Representative Busada. This is a package that is a proposed constitutional amendment and its implementing bill that would be proposing a property tax exemption and assessment limitation on long-term leases of 6 months or more. To be more specific, if you have a homestead property, you currently own a residence in Florida with a homestead exemption on it. You could, if you owned another piece of property as an investment property, file to have your homestead cap of 3% on your assessment and your $50,000 exemption applied to your rental investment property. Again, these bills are up tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the House Agricultural and Tourism Subcommittee. We would love for you to reach out to your legislators today and tomorrow and let them know why this is a bad idea, particularly because it has a $1.4 billion price tag. That is billion with a B. $1.4 billion hit to local government should this pass with 60% of the approval of the voters. Also wanted to mention two committees that we are watching for agendas to pop out later today. Both of these committees meet on Wednesday. The first is the House Ways and Means Committee at 8 a.m. The agenda pops out at 5 p.m. today. That gives us a very short turnaround time. So I'm going to ask you to stay close to your devices so that you can receive any alerts we may have for you. Why is Ways and Means important? Because all of those bad property tax bills we've been talking about all session go through this committee first. So we are watching it very closely. The second committee we are watching on Wednesday is the House State Affairs Committee, which meets at 4 p.m. Again, that agenda will post later today at 5 o'clock. Of note, we are watching for House Bill 503 by Representative Botana, which is the local business tax bill. So stay tuned, stay alert, and thank you for your help. And with that, I'll turn it over to David.
Thank you, Charles, and good morning, everybody. I have three bills to talk to you about this morning, and let me just start off with the big one. The big one is dealing with community redevelopment agencies. It's Senate Bill 1242 by Senator McClain. It's going to be heard Tuesday in the Senate Judiciary Committee at 4 o'clock. This is a bill that we oppose, and let me thank all of you for your great advocacy on this bill while you were here for Legislative Action Days. Unfortunately, the bill did get placed on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and so it is going to be considered. As a reminder, this bill does three things. It would say that no new CRAs are allowed to be created in the state of Florida. It would phase out all existing CRAs by 2045. And lastly, any existing CRAs would not able to fund new projects. And a new project is essentially anything that's not in this year's budget. You wouldn't be able to spend any TIF funds on it. We are opposed to the bill. The ask would be to reach out to the Senate Judiciary Committee and express our opposition to the bill to any of the members on Senate Judiciary Committee. And so that is the update on CRAs. Moving on to Community Affairs meeting this afternoon, Senate Bill 482 by Senator DeSigley deals with local government. Primarily, this bill is dealing with impact fees, and there's two provisions to the bill that I wanted to make you aware of. Number one, it would say that cities and counties are not allowed to require a developer to pay for any art-related expenses as part of approving a development order. Number two, and this is the part that was very concerning, deals with extraordinary circumstances when we're raising impact fees. Under current law, you have to phase in impact fee increases, and you can't go higher than 12.5% per year with the increase in impact fees. This bill defines extraordinary circumstances, which is a way that cities can raise above that 12.5%. A late filed amendment was literally just filed right before we started this phone call. And so I would encourage our members, if you're interested in this issue, to please go ahead and review the late filed amendment that was just filed to Senate Bill 482. And please provide me with your feedback on that late filed amendment as quickly as possible so that we could advocate on the late filed amendment. The barcode number on that amendment, by the way, is 203724, 203724. And then the last bill I wanted to talk to you about this morning is a bill dealing with charter school zoning issues. It's Senate Bill 1188 by Senator McClain. The bill is going to be heard on Tuesday in the Senate Transportation Committee, and there's two parts to this bill that we are opposed to. Number one, it deals with what's called vehicle stacking ordinances, and it preempts those. Essentially what that means is...
We're getting some feedback on the call. If your phone is currently unmuted, if you could take 1 second, look down and hit that mute button, we'd appreciate it.
Thanks, Casey. Real briefly, here, Senate Bill 1188 deals with charter school zoning, and there's an issue that apparently has upset some charter schools, and it deals with when the vehicles are lining up to pick up and drop off kids, some cities have enacted ordinances to try to control the flow of that traffic. However, some of those ordinances, by a result of how they've limited the amount of cars that could line up, have also limited the amount of students that could enroll at those schools. And so this bill preempts those ordinances. Additionally, whenever a charter school converts an existing building, like a church or a movie theater, into a charter school, the bill preempts the ability of a city or county to require a conditional use approval or a special exemption to the current zoning in order for them to be able to convert that existing structure into the charter school. And so we are opposed to that bill. With that, I will turn it over to Matt Singer.
Thank you, David, and good morning, everyone. First bill I want to put on your radar will be heard at 4 p.m. today in the Senate Community Affairs Committee, and that is Senate Bill 712 relating to construction regulations. The section that we want to put on your radar is the first section of the bill. It has to do with synthetic turf, or you may know it as AstroTurf. This is artificial grass, and the bill started with a full preemption on local governments from being able to prohibit the installation or regulate it in any way. The bill has had an amendment filed to it in this committee stop that drastically improves this section. We have been working with some stakeholders to try to establish minimum standards for this type of regulation, and so the bill now, as amended, would direct the Department of Environmental Protection to establish these minimum standards, and the preemption on local regulation would not come into effect until this rule would be adopted. The House bill will be heard tomorrow, and that's House Bill 683 in the House Intergovernmental Affairs Subcommittee, and so we're waiting to see both of these bills be amended in committee. The second bill that I want to put on your radar will be heard on Wednesday in the Senate Fiscal Policy Committee. And that's Senate Bill 810 relating to stormwater management systems. This bill also has come a long way from where it was first filed, and is filed by Senator Burgess, who's trying to improve situations back home post-storm, whenever we have a large influx of rainfall or even after a hurricane. This bill would have initially mandated the annual inspection of all known works in a municipal stormwater system. The bill was amended in the last stop
to apply it to MS4 entities, which are municipal separate storm sewer systems. And it would have required us to identify vulnerable infrastructure within our systems or any component thereof. This doesn't go far enough, but was a step in the right direction. And so if you have any members of your delegation on the Senate Fiscal Policy Committee, please encourage them and Senator Burgess to continue amending this bill to make sure that it doesn't impose a large unfunded mandate back home on inspections that we're already doing. And again, this is Senate Bill 810, and will be heard in Fiscal Policy tomorrow at 9 a.m. And with that, I'll pass it over to Rebecca.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning, everybody. Two bills I want to mention to you this morning. The first is Senate Bill 1730, entitled Housing, by Senator Kalatayu. This is the Senate's version of the revisions to the Live Equal Act. This is the bill that the League is neutral on. The adjustments to the Live Local Act are fairly measured in nature. Some of the changes in the bill are that planned unit developments will be included as eligible properties for Live Local Act projects. However, areas within a PUD that are excluded for such projects include golf courses, recreational areas, and open spaces. The bill also clarifies that a Live Local Act project should be administratively approved with no review by any other bodies in the government, such as quasi-judicial bodies or other. It provides a cause of action to challenge a local government's action on the Live Local Act. However, the bill provides that a prevailing party would get attorney's fees, not just a prevailing plaintiff. It also provides a definition of commercial, but importantly excludes home-based businesses from that definition, which is something the League has requested. It also defines mixed use, but it does so in a way that's very different from the House Companion Bill and would exclude commercial uses or non-residential uses from that definition that are ancillary or accessory. It also puts some limitations on local government's ability to use moratoria to prevent building and development. Such moratoria, if it limits the Live Local Act, would be limited to no more than 90 days. However, the bill, as amended, and there's an amendment pending to the bill that would give back some authority to local governments in this regard by allowing a local government to impose a moratorium for reasons related to flooding, stormwater, or lack of availability of public facilities and services. So that is the sum and substance of Senate Bill 1730 with the pending amendment that will be heard in Community Affairs this afternoon at 4 p.m. On Tuesday at 9 a.m. in the Rules Committee, that committee will take up Senate Bill 184, also relating to affordable housing, by Senator Gates. This bill addresses accessory dwelling units. It requires cities and counties to adopt ordinances to allow accessory dwelling units in any area that's zoned for single family. It includes within the definition of accessory dwelling unit a manufactured home constructed on or after January 1st of 2025. It also provides an accessory dwelling unit may not be rented for a period of less than 1 month. So that helps out with the short-term rental issue. It does prohibit a local government from imposing minimum parking requirements on an accessory dwelling unit. So what I would ask everybody to do is, if you're concerned about this bill, obviously you're opposed to it, but a specific ask that would help would be to ask that the bill be amended to allow local governments to impose parking requirements on an accessory dwelling unit if it exceeds 500 square feet in size. So that's the ask. That's Senate Bill 184 by Senator Gates. That's all I have, and Sam Wagner is going to close it out for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Good morning, everyone. I have three bills for you today, Senate Bill 110 and House Bill 1427, the Rural Communities Bill. The sponsors are Senator Simon and Representative Griffiths. We're still monitoring these bills, and it still is a central priority of the Senate President.
Senate Bill 110 and House Bill 1427, they modernize support for fiscally constrained counties, allocating $50 million new money directly to fiscally constrained counties. Our ask is that if you are a city in a fiscally constrained county, that you reach out to your representative and explain why a city within a fiscally constrained county should also get direct funding. The Senate bill is passed out of the Senate and is sitting in House messages. The House bill will likely be up in its second committee stop on April 7th. The second bill I have for you, or set of bills, is House Bill 1211 and Senate Bill 1554, titled Public Safety, by Representative Abbott and Senator Collins. We were originally opposed to these bills. However, the bill was a comprehensive reform of public safety in Florida. And the original bill required the consolidation of all E911 call centers into the sheriff's office by 2029. However, there was a strike all amendment filed to the House bill that removed all of the issues that we had. In short, it establishes a counterterrorism and counterintelligence unit within the Department of Law Enforcement to address terrorist threats and foreign intelligence. It also updates the missing persons report protocols, requiring regular database reviews and updates. This bill will be up in its first committee stop on Tuesday in the House Governmental Operations Subcommittee. The Senate bill has yet to receive a hearing. The last set of bills I have for you are Senate Bill 954 and House Bill 1163, titled Recovery Residences, by Senator Gruters and Representative Owen. These bills both have a strike all amendment filed to them. The amendments are identical and do the following. They designate that any certified recovery residence as a non-transient residential use for zoning purposes prevents local regulations from restricting their presence in multifamily structures. It mandates that cities and counties must allow these residents in multifamily residential districts without requiring zoning changes, special exceptions, or land use approval. The Senate bill will be heard in its first stop in the Community Affairs Committee tonight at 4 p.m. The House bill will receive its first hearing tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. in the House Human Services Subcommittee. Our ask is simple. Reach out to the members on the Senate Community Affairs Committee and the members of the House Human Services Committee, and let them know how this preemption and impact will hurt your local zoning and your multifamily structures and your neighborhoods in your localities. And that's all I have for you. With that, we'll pass it back to Casey Cook.
Thank you, Sam. So you've heard it, folks. We have a busy week ahead. Also going on and of note is that we're entering budget season. And so within the last couple of days, the Senate has rolled out its budget proposal, and the House this morning has rolled out its own budget proposal. Of note, right now the Senate budget, or the proposed budget, is $117.3 billion. The House is significantly lower than both the Senate's proposed budget and the governor's proposed budget. The House has released its budget. It's coming in at $112.9 billion. So there is a big gap between the House and the Senate, and that will be negotiated over the next 4 weeks to determine where we end up or what the state budget looks like a little bit later in session. But that is something also going on right now, and you're starting to see the legislature shift its focus to focusing on budget proposals, and so that will take up some of the time. That's a good thing, because the more time they spend on budget stuff, the less time they spend on policy bills. So we'll transition into question and answers right now. If you have a question, you'll press *9 on your phone. And when you're recognized, please lead with your name and the city that you're affiliated with. First question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Hey, first of all, great week last week. It was a great turnout, and thanks for your leadership there. This is Holly Smith, Vice Mayor of the City of Sanibel, and I have a couple of questions for Rebecca on her Senate Bill 1730 and then the additional bill, I think Senate Bill 184. Rebecca, I'll start with Senate Bill 1730. One question I have on the House side, there was that religious exemption, which was a pretty important factor for us to look at. Is that talked about in the Senate bill?
Thank you. That's a good question. No, that language is not in the Senate bill. As I as I mentioned, the Senate bill is very, very targeted. It makes relatively minor. I mean, I guess some people might view them as more significant, but compared to the House bill, it is a much more compact bill, much less objectionable. So it doesn't have that religious language in it. And by the way, if you're wondering where the House bill is, it is still in the House Housing, Agriculture, and Tourism Subcommittee. I expect it may be on the agenda for the House Intergovernmental Affairs Committee, perhaps next week. It will not be up this week.
Okay, very good. And moving along to Senate Bill 184 with the accessory dwelling unit. A couple of questions for you there. Is it required? You know, they're looking at this as potential workforce housing, but basically as for residential zoning, that could almost double our density. Some cities have density caps where you have to have a referendum to increase density. Would that override it? And also in regards to the density, to the use of that, it doesn't indicate that it must be workforce housing. It's just an additional ADU. Is that correct?
That's right. There's no tie to workforce housing. With respect to your question about density caps, that may require a charter amendment. It requires the local government, the bill requires the local government to adopt an ordinance allowing accessory dwelling units. I would defer to the opinion of your city attorney as to how that provision may either complement or override or not override any density caps that you may have in your charter, but that's definitely a question that your city attorney will need to take a look at.
And we can, that's going to be going through rules, so that's something that Kathleen Pasadena is the chair of that, correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Vice President Smith. All right, next question.
Good morning. This is Jennifer Viscara from Sunny Isles Beach. Two questions. One is more procedural. When it says that something has been placed on a special order calendar, what does that mean?
So that means it has passed all of its committees of reference and it is now eligible to be heard on second reading. And so on second reading, on whether it's the House floor or Senate floor, members can ask questions of the bill sponsor. And then after that question and answer period is over, it is rolled to third reading. And on third reading, there is debate. And then there's eventually a vote on that proposal.
Okay. Thank you. And my second question is regarding the Sovereign Immunity 301. The last I looked, it didn't have any Senate movement. Do we have any news on that?
Good morning. This is David Cruz. That's a great question on the sovereign immunity issue. And some good news to report is that the Senate bill was not placed on the Senate Judiciary Committee agenda for this week. So in essence, that means that the Senate bill was not heard in Senate Judiciary, and Senate Judiciary is not scheduled to meet the following week. So I think we're sitting in a good spot in the Senate. On the House side, however, it seems like the House is going to move forward with their proposal. It's very likely that the House will agenda the House Bill 301 in the House Judiciary Committee that will meet later this week. And then from there, you know, anything could happen. So I wouldn't say that this issue is over with, and I would certainly encourage you to continue your advocacy. As we get late in session, issues like this can percolate to the Senate President's office and the Speaker's office, and there's certainly some trading that happens late in session. And so I certainly would not want this issue to become one of those issues that's traded. And so in that case, I would encourage you to continue your advocacy on it.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Good morning. This is Jane West, City Attorney for Palatka. Regarding the proposed constitutional amendment for property taxes, would that preclude foreclosing on the leased properties?
Good morning. This is Charles. There is no language within the implementing bill speaking towards preclusion of any foreclosures of the benefit receiving rental properties. This bill is very, very general. It is not specific. There's a lot of questions that we have pertaining to what problem are we really trying to solve other than a homestead property tax exemption for investors. So we have a ton of questions, but so noted. Thank you for raising that issue, and we'll be sure to include that within our line of questioning.
Thank you. That obviously affects our code enforcement significantly.
Sure. Thank you, Jane. Really good question / point there. All right, next caller.
Casey, it's William Whitson with Orange Park. Real quick, Senate Bill. Yes, good morning. Senate Bill 1188. On the charter schools. Two questions. What committee is that going to be heard in this afternoon or this week? And does it have a House companion?
Good morning. This is David Cruz again. It is going to be heard on Tuesday in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The House companion is House Bill 569 by Representative Kendall.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next caller.
Good morning. This is Willie Puz with the Solid Waste Authority of Palm Beach County, and I'm looking for your insight on Senate Bill 1822. This is the bill that preempts the regulation of auxiliary containers to the state, but I think it was Friday they had a late filed amendment that seems to contradict a prior amendment that was on House Bill 1609. And 1609, what it did was it put a half-mile radius, that was their language, and this amendment puts a one-mile radius around the stack of a waste-to-energy facility. And wanted to see if you had any insight, because this amendment doesn't seem to have anything to do with the main bill. And thank you.
Good morning. This is Matt Singer, and that's great insight. It doesn't have anything to do with that main bill, and it's that time of session where some issues that are found in other places tend to appear on other bills, and that's a great point on this one. It is very similar language. In that amendment that you referenced, it does use language from House Bill 1609, which has to do with the placement of a waste facility in an ash incinerator, and it expands that radius from a half mile to 1 mile. But it also narrows the scope to a charter county found in Chapter 125. And so it seems quite targeted at Miami-Dade County. That is on our radar, and we're watching that bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Willie. Good question. And, you know, this is the point in session where bills are dying. And so if I'm a lobbyist and my bill is not looking great, maybe it hadn't been heard in committee. Maybe it's only been heard in one committee. I'm looking for other vehicles and trying to convince those bill sponsors to let me file my amendment and put my amendment on their bill. And so we spend a large portion of our time reading every single amendment that's filed, because there are shenanigans that happen as you move to the back half of session. And we want to make sure that, you know, we're reading everything and that we can get in front of some of these attempts. Really good question. All right, next caller.
Hi, it's Commissioner Stewart from Orlando. I heard rumor, I saw some article towards the end of last week in Orlando about a proposed 0.75% cut in state sales tax. Is that making any progress, or can you help me out with it?
Sure, great question, Commissioner Stewart. So you've seen the governor in various press conferences talking about how he wants to eliminate property taxes or to be bold in property tax reform. And, you know, there has been some tension between the governor's office and the legislative branch. I suspect that this sales tax proposal was a response to the governor weighing in heavily on property taxes. And it was the House's way of saying, we can do something bigger and better, and we can actually provide relief to everyone, not just homeowners, in the form of a sales tax cut. Now, if you go back to what I said at the beginning of the call, where, you know, it's budget season, that 0.75% drop in the sales tax would have a $5 billion impact on the state's budget. And, you know, the House and Senate budget proposals are about $4 billion off right now. Of note, the Senate has not come out and expressed an interest, or they weren't, you know, linking arms in that announcement about dropping the sales tax rate. So I suspect that this is something that would be up for negotiation. But realistically, it's probably more of a response to, you know, some of the things the governor's been saying about property taxes. All right, next caller.
Hey, this is Joe Elliott, City of Wildwood. Just a question. Have any of you heard anything on House Bill 531, autism? It's a general bill introduced by Maggard, with co-introducers of Blanco, Manny, Rutz, Tenz, Temple, Weinberger. I think it's a much needed bill, and it allows grant funds to be used in screening, referrals, treatment, and related services for children with autism, benefiting both the child and the family. Any thoughts, any motion, any update on that bill? 531.
Yeah, Commissioner Elliott, no doubt that is a very important issue, but we've got our hands full with just those bills that are impacting cities that are out there. I can tell you that that bill has gotten through its first committee. It's now sitting in the healthcare budget subcommittee. It doesn't look like the Senate bill has moved yet. But that's one that wasn't on our radar because we're trying to focus on all these bad bills impacting cities. But no doubt it sounds like a, you know, a good policy change.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. All right, next caller.
Yes, hi. This is Lisa DeVito, City of Crescent City, rural northeast Putnam County. Two questions. One, for the Live Local Act bill that I thought I heard Rebecca review, did I hear correctly that we are no longer in opposition to that bill, that we are neutral?
Thank you for the question. We are opposed to the House bill, House Bill 943. Okay. We are neutral on the Senate bill, Senate Bill 1730. The bills are vastly different from each other.
Got it. Thanks to, I understand your great efforts. And then my second question is, that relates to other information. So is the House of Representatives budget that is significantly lower than the Senate budget, is that factoring in their lowering the sales tax rate? Is that why they have that lower budget, or is it other factors?
Yes, I believe so. But remember, all of this is subject to negotiations at the end of the day. And so, sure. You know, all of this, you know, these conversations will be had first between subcommittee budget chairs, then with the full appropriations chairs. And then if they can't resolve, you know, the remaining issues, then those last remaining issues get negotiated between the speaker and the Senate president. And so they are vastly different proposals, and I think the picture will become clearer as we, you know, get further into the budget process. But right now, these are the, you know, the opening volleys.
Sure, great. I just was wondering whether they're, you know, laying their marker down for their sales tax reduction. But anyway, I guess, as you say, we'll see. And thanks to everyone. I thought last week was absolutely fabulous. It was great to be there. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And it was good seeing everybody. This was the largest legislative action days we've ever had. And we had the most first-time attendees ever. And so it was great seeing everybody. And I can tell you anecdotally with the legislators that I've spoken with, you know, they appreciated having our folks in town and spreading the gospel. All right. We have a busy week ahead of us. We will be back same time, same place next Monday. Stay close to your devices. Respond to alerts. Make sure that your legislators are informed of your city's positions on all of these bills that we talked about. thank you all for everything you do. And if we keep it up, we'll have a good session. Thanks, everybody.